I usually start with good morning, but definitely it's not morning. And Chef, I came with two glasses of wine and we're going to start our new and next episode talking about meat.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Hello to another episode, or the first episode of, what did we call it? Meat stories or smoky stories. And today we're going to...
Smoking hot stories.
Yeah, starting wrong. And today you're going to meet a very good friend of mine, someone I really respect, love, and enjoy watching and tasting great meat. He started way far away from food, and one day he said, okay, you know what? I love to eat. And this is how the smoking weird story started. Fred Casagrande, tell me about you.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, I had a love story with food, especially barbecue, as you can tell from the backyard here. And it's mostly about grilling meat. I mean, we will grill some other things, but today we're going to speak about meat.
Meat.
Red meat in particular. We have some amazing cuts, so we're going to go through, you know, what they are, where they come from, how to treat them, how to process them, and how to enjoy them to the max.
So you went to one of the great suppliers in the UAE, good friends of ours, Meat House Gourmet, and you chose on your own a couple of cuts so we can start the right way. And as I see here, lots of marbling, lots of fat, great white color. Let's start by the beginning. When people see white in meat, usually they get scared. I don't eat fat, I don't want white. Let's talk the difference, and let's explain the differences between fat and marbling, if that question is put rightly.
Absolutely. So let's have a look at some of the cuts that we have here, right? So what we have here is we have two ribeyes, we have two strip loins, we have some tenderloin, and we have some skirt.
Okay.
So if you look visibly, you can see here there is a slab of fat, right? This white piece on the side, that's the fat cap. If it doesn't render, we just cut it or we trim it at the time of serving or eating.
We need it for flavoring.
We need it for flavoring,
it's
right?
It's very important not to remove it before grilling.
Flavor is stored in fat. It's always a compliment even when we don't talk about food.
Okay.
Then you can see the intramuscular fat, which is really that the white dots.
Can
within
I open
the,
it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The white dots within the muscle.
Okay.
This is what we call the marbling. This is fat that will render. It will melt during the grilling, and it will turn into pure, pure flavor.
So this is good fat. It's, let me explain it more details. So it's the fat that gives flavor. It's the fat that you should not be scared of. It's the white fat, not the yellow fat. It's not that fat that you will clean up and remove. It's that fat that you will leave. This has taken months and years to be accomplished. And you pay for it, actually. So when you see that fat, that kind of fat, that marbling that we call marbling, it's very important to look at and understand and enjoy. You decide to eat it well done or medium or rare and make it disappear. But it's very important to keep it and not cut it and say, oh,
I think it's important to understand it, right? So we need to understand why it's there, how it's been made. If you look at the grading of the meat, right? So most of the meat that we have tonight is from the US. Okay. So the United States Department of Agriculture has a grading system that helps people to understand the quality of the meat. It's the USDA something. There are actually five grades into that scale. The first two are commercial standard. You will never see them in retail. They are used by food processors to do, you know,
corned beef
and stuff like
that. Cheeseburgers,
yeah. Etc. Then you have select. Select is usually very lean. There is not a lot of fat of marbling. Then you have choice, which has a little bit more marbling. And what we have tonight is prime. So this is a prime, USDA prime strip loin.
So in, just to put it into perspective to understand what it is, when you go to Costco in the States, you would only find prime and choice. You would never find something else. So these are the two. In comparison to the Australian grading, they would go up to MB9, MB10. So probably 10 grades, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 10. So and the Americans only have 5, of which we eat 3 or enjoy 3 or know about 3. Yeah. So it's a different nomenclature. It's different naming. with different values.
So the USDA has a website, and they just launched a new video to educate people on what the grading structure means. It's not just marbling. There are a lot of other factors that come into the grading. MB is really the marbling index. So that's the higher the number, the higher the marbling of the meat.
The Americans are known for real flavor, good flavor, intense flavor, good texture, even though lots of fat, but good texture, intense texture. Your teeth will feel the meat and way more flavor.
Absolutely.
So let's before we start, let us tell you that we're not doing a cooking session. We're going to explain more about food. It's going to be more of a podcast interview. We're going to talk and talk and talk. Please stay tuned until the end, because it's going to be a lot of education and definitely lots of cooking, because we need to eat.
And a lot of eating.
Yeah, definitely.
Somebody's got to do it.
So where do we start? How did you choose your meat?
So I wanted to explore a little bit of everything, right? So there is what we call the big three. Mm-hmm. Which is strip loin, ribeye, and tenderloin. Mm-hmm. Those are prime cuts, yeah? And then there are some secondary cuts. Secondary cuts are cuts that are usually considered of a lesser quality.
Okay.
So they are usually also less expensive, which I like. And they require a little bit more understanding to know how to really cook them well, right? So it's easier to make a secondary cut inedible than it is of a prime cut. Like, you know, you take a tenderloin, you know, apart if you burn it, it will always be tender. Yeah. So we'll talk about that in a minute. So here what you can see is we have two different cuts.
Okay.
Two of them are USDA prime. Mm-hmm. This is a strip loin, and this is a ribeye.
Should we take a step back and stop for a minute and understand, okay, meat. Is all the cow or all the veal the same? Where do you choose? How do you choose it? Here, there? What are the different names? Okay, strip loin, nice name. And then what? How is it?
Ta-da! I came prepared. So, I don't know if we can see that. Do we do a zoom
on that? Yeah.
Okay. So this is the structure of a cow. And this is how usually the butcher is going to structure the cuts of the different parts of the beef. So I highlighted four of them, which are the four cuts that we're going to have tonight. Mm-hmm. The tenderloin is the side of that muscle close to the kidneys alongside the spine. So as you can see, it's a long muscle that starts with the point and ends with the butt. And the middle part, which is the thickest, is where you find the Chateaubriand, or what we usually put in a Wellington. The Wellington is actually in the oven for later.
Nice.
Right? So it's a very lean muscle because it's one of the muscles that works the less. So it's a muscle that doesn't move a lot, meaning there is not a lot of exercise, not a lot of, you know, structure to sustain exercise.
Okay.
Then we have the plate. So the plate is the belly part of the cow. And you have several great cuts. Those are all secondary cuts. This is an outside skirt. Okay, so it's really the upper part of the plate that is close to the rib cage.
You have to go.
I'm going to have in a minute to go and check on my Wellington. Let's just finish the skirt, right? So the skirt is a very flavorful and very fatty. You can see there's
this
a lot of
marbling.
This is
the part that melts like butter under the teeth.
It absolutely.
Needs quite probably 30 seconds to a minute on the grill if you want very quick, very fast.
You want to keep it juicy. If you want to keep it juicy, it's a very fast grill, flash grill. Now, you can see very, very strong lines of grain. Those are the fibers of the muscle. If you cut with the grain, it's impossible to chew. Like, it's extremely chewy. So when you serve it, usually you cut against the grain to make the piece easier to eat. We'll test that actually when we eat later on. I'll cut a couple of slices with the grain, just for fun, and I cut the rest.
I'm not eating my Wellington overcooked.
Done. I'll be right back.
So we're going to talk about meat during this episode, and it's very important to understand meat. We go to a supermarket and say, give me meat. But what is meat? What is beef? What kind of beef? Australian, Brazilian, American, and lots of other things. Which part of the beef is important, and for what use? It's very important to understand your meat, how to use it, how to cut it. We here in our country, we have fresh meat, so meat that is slaughtered this morning, and let's eat it. meat cannot be enjoyed the same day. It needs to rest. Lamb needs a couple of days, up to probably 7 days. Beef needs as well 3 to 4 days. And it depends on what kind of beef you're using or what kind of meat you're using. So it needs to relax, to tenderize, to soften. And during the last 5 or 10 years, I would say, the new age of meat, we heard about dry aging. And dry aging is relaxing and letting the meat relax for more than 30 days. And what is dry aging? We're going to talk about it in a bit. Accordingly, when you go to a supermarket, it's very important to understand what is your meat? What do you need and what do you want to expect? Should I take that meat or that beef and see it being opened? Should I use any part of the beef and take it and see and use it in any way? Wait, meat takes time to rest. Meat takes time to educate. What is your cow eating? Is it corn-fed? Is it grass-fed? Has it been pampered? And this is very important. Why does a Kobe beef not taste so good? It tastes so good, but why is it so expensive? Why does a Wagyu is so expensive or a Kobe? Would the world, can the world of 8 billion, if half of them are eating meat, if all restaurants are serving Wagyu, can all restaurants of the world say, serve Wagyu at the same time? We're not sure. Can all restaurants of the world say serve Angus at the same time? We're definitely not sure. So accordingly, pay attention what you're buying. What are the names you are buying or you are selling? What are the marketing names that are given to you? And accordingly, you would choose in definitely better. So 6 more minutes?
Yeah.
6 more minutes. So let's take the conversation from here. When I go to a restaurant, and I need to choose my meat, yep. What do I choose? How do I choose? What would I like to eat? How, where do I go? So I have the meat menu and say, okay, is it, how expensive is it? It is the price? Is it something that looks trendy? How do I choose?
I think it's mainly a matter of taste, to be honest. It's, I'll give you an example. I mean, my favorite cut is the ribeye. My wife's favorite cut is the tenderloin. So we don't have the same taste at all.
Ribeye is fattier?
Ribeye is fattier. It's a bit more chewy. It's definitely a lot more flavorful.
Bonus information, difference between a ribeye and the tomahawk?
The bone, right? So
it's the same thing,
exactly.
Less the bone. Removing the bone becomes a ribeye.
So, if we go back to the, so the ribeye comes from the rib cage, okay? So between the 6th and the 12th ribs, these are the biggest ones. So if you cut the bone with the ribeye, you end up with a bone-in ribeye. If you leave a long bone, you end up with a tomahawk. It's the same meat, right? Now, when you grill something that has the bone with it, you just need to be careful that the bone will heat a lot less or a lot slower. Meaning that when your meat is at the right temperature, there is the part that is close to the bone that will stay cooler. So if you want it medium, that's going to be medium rare. If you want it medium rare, that's going to be rare.
Let's do a French versus Lebanon comparison. Where do you eat your tartare from versus the kebenaye?
So the tartare comes from the tenderloin usually, right? Kebenaye? That's a good question. I'm not sure.
I think it's the same. But usually meat that doesn't have lots of pressure and lots of walking, so it can be probably around here. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the lazy muscles.
Or here, so yeah. That's a tricky question. Next. So we're doing a beef Wellington. We're going to explain about it later on.
Yep.
Fred, even though they're getting excited and they want to see me, they want to see the firing the grill, but I would love to know more about you. How someone working in the corporate world, working into big companies, big projects, and then one day waking up and saying, I love food, I want to follow and pursue my passion. How'd you start? Probably many would love to do that.
Well, it's not one day. That's the thing, right? It's every day. It's one day every day for a very high number of days where it's not that there is less satisfaction in the day job, but it's just every day I'm looking forward to come home to be able to do this. And then when you eventually become better at that, because by practice you will become better at that, you start having opportunities. People come eat at your place, they love the food, they talk about it, then you have, you know, this peer pressure that tells you you should do pop-ups. You know, pop-ups are extremely trendy at the moment worldwide. Mm-hmm. It's really a new trend that revolutionized the food industry for the past 2-3 years. And, you know...
And you end up investing in all those grills.
No, I have a grilling problem.
Okay, next. You go to your supplier. I was talking about how to choose your meat.
Yeah.
Do you go to a supermarket? Do you go online? Do you go to a certain supplier, you know? They need to understand,
yeah,
how do I buy my meat, especially in a country like the UAE, where usually meat at the supermarket is not as good as the meat that you can get from a good supplier that supplies restaurants.
Right. So, I mean, first there is the question of volume. I mean, I heard you speak before about, you know, the supply of Wagyu, the supply of Angus and everything. A store like UAE has a supply chain challenge because it's a small country. It's far from everywhere. And we don't have a local production. We don't have cattle in the UAE, meaning that all the meat that we get is imported from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we import from many countries. We import from Australia, from the US, from Brazil, from South Africa, from Uruguay. There are a lot of meat countries that produce.
And India and Pakistan and all the other places, which
as
we
well
probably don't eat, but huge communities do.
Huge communities do, absolutely. So, meaning that, you know, some big chains, they have access to big distributors,
mm-hmm,
and they might not be able to sustain the same level of quality as, mm-hmm, a smaller butcher. So I personally tend to prefer going to my butcher, because also my butcher is very big on provenance. So he's going to tell me, you know, this meat is from US, this meat is from Australia. We have some like the...
So one of the people you really need to trust is your butcher.
Trust your butcher, always, right?
So choose your butcher, a butcher you can trust.
Let's be honest, okay? This piece of meat looks good, yeah? Now, it could come from Australia. If my butcher tells me it's USDA prime, I have to trust him. How,
yeah, exactly.
How do I make the difference, right? I can tell definitely if it's prime, if it's choice or, yeah, something else, or the marbling level. So by looking at a piece of meat, mm-hmm, I can tell if it's going to be a good piece of meat or a less good piece of meat.
So I would say usually there is food before COVID and food after COVID. We never knew, we never would have expected to be able to enjoy meat from a restaurant at home. And back then it was meat from the supermarket. And you always went to a restaurant to have a tomahawk, went to a restaurant to have a ribeye, and you go to a supermarket and never find these cuts. Until COVID came in, delivery companies started, online orders started, and one of the companies, of which Meat House Gourmet, has everything that they sell to a restaurant back home from your phone. So you can go online on the application and choose any cut you might imagine that you would find at at a restaurant and buy it for home. Usually meat is sold unprepared, so unless your butcher would prepare it for you. How would you start when you take a piece of meat? Where do you start? What do you start cutting? You remove everything white versus not? Where do you start? What do you do?
So this, again, you have to trust your butcher. We're extremely lucky. I'll give you the example of the skirt, okay? When you look at this one, skirt is a piece that is extremely dirty. It comes with silver skin, a lot of connective tissues that help, you know, sustain the structure of the muscle. All of that needs to be removed. It adds tenderness, it adds flavor, but you can't eat it. It's very chewy.
Just chosen.
So if you leave it for the cooking, the eater is going to have to remove it. That's why people usually remove it before the grilling. This one, as you can see, is completely clean. It's absolutely neat, meaning I season it, throw it on the grill, done and dusted.
Done deal.
Yeah? Same for those. As I said before, on the strip loin, the fat cap, I leave it. We'll cut it, we'll trim it when we serve. The ribeye is perfect. There is nothing to trim. Like, you know, there is absolutely beautiful.
I feel like
beautiful.
I want to grab it raw and eat it. While you want to go back?
Yeah, I'm just going to check on the Wellington.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk about the structure also of the ribeye.
Excellent. While he goes back to the kitchen and checks on the Wellington, I'm going to tell you about meat. Meat comes in many forms, of which frozen or chilled. It's very important to understand that meat high-end from our suppliers like this one from the States or from Australia, come chilled. They were not frozen. They come chilled, they last for around a month or so. And the minute you open up the bag or cut it or take a piece home, you need to consume within the next 3 days and not weeks and not months. Meat that comes frozen has a different shelf life, has a different texture, has a different value, has a different price, has a different everything. So when you look at that meat and you see how shiny it is and you see how fresh it is and the smell that you feel, the thickness, the white, beautiful, clear white fat, and all these shiny little pieces that were cut this morning, chilled all the way coming from the States, now haven't seen a freezer yet. And since it was not frozen before, you can freeze them now or decide to eat them the same day. We can continue and speak about meat for hours and hours and hours and hours. And let me tell you that I have chosen one of the best meat experts in the country to enjoy our time, to try and test, to grill. And we're going to talk about the grilling and the different grilling techniques while talking about the meat and enjoying every single piece. You want to talk about different grilling techniques? How do you choose your grill? Is it charcoal? Is it wood? Is it apple chips or any other chips? Is it a flat grill? How do you choose your grill?
But again, the answer is always going to be depends. So as you can see, there is a wide variety of devices here. Mm-hmm. I have a personal preference for charcoal and wood, which is what we're going to use today, simply because it's what provides the best heat control for me on the meat. It's what is going to be the hottest. Like, if you can see, the metal has bent. That's how hot that grill becomes. Mm-hmm. It's really the grill from hell. What you want with the red meat, you want this Maillard reaction. You want that brown crust at the surface to capture the juices inside.
Kind of a caramelization.
Kind of a caramelization, right? So it can be attained with other type of heat sources. I have a preference now for charcoal. I usually add on my charcoal a log of wood. So this is oak, extremely dried. And this just adds a lot of flavor when we go to the grilling part. So we're gonna start the coal in a minute and add that log on it. But there is gas. A lot of people are gonna tell you gas is bad because, you know, I call them snobs. Gas is great when you have a sudden craving,
okay,
and you have to take a ribeye out of the fridge. And you know, you just press a button, 5 minutes later you have the heat, throw it on it, you're done, switch it off, that's it. So this wooden charcoal is higher maintenance, you need to be prepared. If you have a long cook, you need to maintain the fire, which is not the case with gas.
What is a Wellington?
So a Wellington is a Chateaubriand, so it's the middle part of the filet that is coated with a duxelle, which is mushrooms and olives, finely diced. There is sometimes spinach, there is bacon, and then there is puff pastry around it. It's thrown in the oven, and it is delicious.
It's a very famous English speciality, which usually is enjoyed as a main lunch or dinner, or sometimes at the 5 o'clock tea with a small piece of beef Wellington. When you cut it, we're going to see it in a bit. It has that amazing robe of bread, of flaky bread, and then the meat that is cooked and yet stays red on the inside without dropping one drop of protein or red, yeah, blood or red liquid. So yes, let's talk about that part.
So
lots of people say, when I cut my meat, I saw blood.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Right, so.
It's not called blood.
You can see here this red liquid here all around, right? Anatomy 101. Blood is in the veins, not in the muscles, right? So this is a protein, just like the blood. Blood is hemoglobin, this is myoglobin. Myoglobin is the protein that transports the oxygen into the muscles when they work. That's why you have meat that is very white, like chicken, because the chicken doesn't work a lot. The muscles don't have to work a lot to transport that weight, meaning there is not a need to transport a lot of oxygen. You look at ducks, the meat is a bit darker. You look at beef, if you look at veal, the meat is a lot lighter than a beef. If you look at venison is extremely dark because those animals are in the wild, they're running all the time, and they are really, you know, fighting for their lives. So doesn't change the fact that some people don't want to see it in their plate, right? So that's also one of the reasons why you rest your meat after grilling. You allow those juices to redistribute and stay within the meat so that when you cut it, they don't flow on the plate. Because remember, those juices are flavor. So if it's out of the meat, it's no longer in our bellies.
Okay. So while you prepare for the grilling, I'm gonna excuse ourselves for the sounds happening because we are outside in Dubai in a hot autumn night, I would say. So probably lots of shiny stuff and some noises, but we are enjoying our time. Okay.
That's the fun part.
Okay, explain. Some people don't know what you're doing. Some people never saw it this way have been throwing fuel or petrol on their charcoal. Please tell us everything we need to know.
So I'm using a propane gun to accelerate the burning of my coal. It's just because I'm not a very patient man.
It's very important to start the coal outside the grill and then throw it in, right?
Yeah, because if you put your coal cold in the grill and then you start the fire, they're not gonna burn evenly. You will have some coal that stay cold and some coals that burn. The chimney allows flow of air from the bottom to the top. So I'm just accelerating.
How do you choose your coal?
I trust my provider, right? So I work with Exit 10. Okay. Exit 10 is a manufacturer in the UAE. So these are the ones who made the Reaper. And they provide me with the coal and they also provide me with the wood. So they ensure that they select the best type of oaks. Again, we don't have a local supply in the UAE because we don't have forests. So it comes from abroad. It's relatively expensive usually to find good quality. And it needs to be dried very well. Otherwise, if it's not dry, it smokes.
Okay.
Which I don't mind in a smoker.
Never use argile charcoal.
So argile charcoal, but it's coconut charcoal, right? So it has a taste.
That's chemical. So while we wait for this to burn or to coat up on fire, let's talk about something white that you threw in your oil. And this is a little tiny secret few chefs will tell you about. And this is the secret of having the crunchiest, softest, most amazing French fries ever.
That's correct. So I use vegetable oil to do the fries.
Hand cut on peels.
Hand cut. So those are Piper Marys from the UK. They are very starchy, so they will be perfect, you know, in terms of keeping their consistency and being crunchy but soft inside. So I blanch them in vinegar water to remove the excess starch but activate the starch. So they will be soft but crunchy. But then what I added into my oil is this. Some countries, they call it beef drippings. Other countries call it tallow. It's basically if you render all that fat and you have a lot of it and then you filter it, you end up with this beauty. This doesn't smell a lot, but it's gonna be extremely flavorful.
Beauty indeed.
And the funny thing is, you can start now finding these in those butcher shops. A couple of years ago, you had to ask them to make tallow because all those trimmings, they were going to waste. Now, it's also sustainable.
How much time should we wait for the charcoal?
Probably 5 minutes.
5 minutes. So meanwhile, chef, frozen versus fresh meat. How do you choose it? What do you think of it? What do you think of frozen meat?
I don't mind, to be honest. I mean, a lot of the meat that we're getting is frozen. The only thing that you need to be mindful of is that you cannot refrost something that has been frozen, right?
Okay.
That's the absolute rule.
Mm-hmm.
When you get meat that has been chilled,
mm-hmm.
Again, this is a matter of trusting your butcher. You know, if the butcher gets the meat frozen, defrosts it, and says it's chilled, yes, it's chilled, but has it been frozen before? So
yeah.
The respecting this chain of cold is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
I do have meat in the freezer. As much as possible, I tend to use fresh meat. You know, sometimes I have an unannounced craving for a barbecue, and my freezer is my go-to place. So, you know,
it seems like it happens every day.
Could be. I can neither confirm nor deny.
Another question, since while we're waiting, tell me about burgers. Tell me about the secret of a good burger. Tell me your opinion about burgers. Talk burgers.
Talk burgers. First of all, I love burgers. Okay. So a burger is very simple. It's a type of sandwich that is a bun, specifically, not any other type of bread, and that has a patty in the middle. Okay. Anything else is an accessory.
Yeah.
And it's very important for people to understand that, you know, people have sometimes a bad image of a burger because of some fast food chains, where a burger is a very cheap piece of food that you just throw and eat, and it's cheap and it's not very good quality. But it can be absolutely amazing. And I had this conversation with a chef friend of mine in France, in Strasbourg. He created, probably, I don't know, 10 years ago, a diner style of restaurant in Strasbourg, and they served only burgers because nowhere else you could get burgers apart from those fast food chains.
Burgers were considered American.
Yeah. And it was an instant hit. But within 9 months, every restaurant had at least one burger on their menu.
Yeah.
Concept dead, because you could have burgers everywhere. And if you look today, you have burgers absolutely everywhere. You have Michelin star restaurant, they put a burger on the menu. It is an amazing burger. But making a burger at home is extremely simple. Again, you need to trust your butcher. You need to understand what the patty will consist of, right? Then there is the making of the burger. So deciding if you want to smash it, if you want to keep it thick and juicy, what kind of meat you put inside, how thin or thick you want to mince it. All of those are very important questions.
That would require definitely an episode of its own.
Absolutely.
So we can start with the burger the way our unfortunate butcher, when we were 10 years old, would put breadcrumbs and Worcestershire in and an egg yolk and whatever you want inside. And probably this is the image of a burger that is chewy and not too appealing with a cheap bun. I'm not sure where it comes from. And a cheap ketchup made back home, et cetera, et cetera. Fast forward to the latest era where a burger is this. With 20% to 30% fat, where a burger is a potato bun that comes all the way from the States, from the biggest factories ever, with very high-end mayo, aioli with truffles, and so on and so forth. And it goes into lots of details where you can grill it, you can smash it, you can put it on a flat grill. You need to put butter or not, butter on the bun or butter or not. You can toast it or not. You can keep it juicy, red on the inside. You can grind it light or thick, and lots of other things. And when you bite it, you would feel like, whoa, oof, a burger is way more than the fast food chains.
Yeah.
So burger is something else that we will discuss one day.
I don't know if we can talk about that. Taste of Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, of course.
I'm going to make burgers as the demo. So I'm going to teach
people. Guy.
I'm going to teach people how to make burgers.
What he just did now is he's imposing to publish the episode before Taste of Abu Dhabi 2024.
No, I'm not. Damn it!
okay, I had a question. I forgot. So, Beef Wellington for tonight. What are these hidden things?
Sure.
I'm chubby. Oh, no.
You're not supposed to see that.
I didn't see it.
You
not
didn't
at
see
all.
It.
What do you think? What do you think of... Did you know that usually meat in restaurants are cooked in ovens? Did you know?
Yes.
What do you think of that?
First of all, there are regulations, right? So some of the regulations impose you to have a single exhaust for every type of heat. So you cannot have a wood-fired oven and an electric oven on the same exhaust. At least that's the case in France, which is why unless a restaurant can run 100% on live fire, usually they don't bother putting two pipes in the whole building. So there are some logistical and technical limitations to that. And then there is also the fact that, honestly, if you have an industrial oven like the rational ovens, they are just perfect. Like the technical engineering that goes behind that device makes it impossible. Unless you press the wrong button, you cannot fail.
So what restaurants do to explain what we just said is for faster effect and to guarantee that the meat is hot on the inside, being red but not cold, they would caramelize or create that réaction de Maillard and then immediately go down to the oven. The oven would cook it, heat it
with evenly
and keep it red on the inside. And then two schools, I would love to hear your opinion, let the meat rest or not.
Well, I would always let the meat rest a little bit, right? Now, there are several schools, as you mentioned. There is one school that says, as long as it cooks, as long as it rests. That's a bit extreme, but we'll see later. So what we can do the test, you know, after we've done grilling, we can cut into one of the pieces immediately after just to see what happens. We can let the other one rest for 5 minutes just to see what happens. So that you will see the difference in behavior of the protein.
So explaining what happens is chefs usually have, if you cook it for 5 minutes, you need to rest it for 5 minutes. And why do you rest it for 5 minutes is because when you cut it, no red, no protein, no liquid would go out of it. And usually when other chefs would say, no, I would love to eat it, enjoy it immediately, out of the grill, on the plate, you cut it and all that juices will run all out. Is this the right way or the other one is the right way? We're not judging. Different techniques, different chefs. This is how it goes.
So it's a matter of taste.
5 minutes in the making. Whoa, you need to see this. This, it's all on full fire. No petrol was used, no diesel, no whatsoever chemicals. Full-fledged, fresh fire.
Yeah. So if you're more patient than I am, you can just use a fire starter, paper or whatever. You put it under the chimney, light it up and wait. So the convection will do the job.
We are not patient.
We're hungry.
And then, ta-da! So while you're preparing, how about you tell us about your business side of it? So Chef Fred has a business. Chef Fred does special events. So Chef Fred can go cook at your place or invite you to a supper club. Tell me more about the business side.
So yeah, I mean, Smoking Beards does live cooking. We do events, we do catering, we do pop-ups, we do collaborations, we do activations. We work with F&B companies, hospitality companies, and help them to activate their outlets. We've done that several times in the past, for the past 2 years. And the other side of the business, of course, is the spice business, right? Because Smoking Beard started as a spice mixology enterprise. So what we're doing is we're mixing layers of flavors and we create spice rubs that are universal.
You are online.
We are online.
Anyone can buy your spices and have half the job done and have the flavors done.
Absolutely. And although those spice mixes have been created for meat, they work on everything. They work in soups, they work on popcorn, they work on vegetables, they work on seafood. It's absolutely crazy.
Beautiful. While we wait, I would love to hear more of the details, because Well, as we said today, it's not a cooking show, it's an explanation show, it's a discussion show, it's a learning show, and they would definitely would love to know about the grill. What kind of metal would you use? What kind of metal is better for the meat? How did you do your grill? Doesn't all the flavor go out or the juices would go out? Tell us a little bit about that conceptual thing that you have created.
So, this grill has been created by Exit 10. Mm-hmm. It's a stainless steel grill.
Okay.
It's a very thick build. And as you can see, the pattern but you know, it's inspired by the Arabic decorations, mm-hmm. but it is extremely thick. So that allows really the meat to be exposed to a lot of heat, but also to be protected from direct flames. Even if you are on direct heat on top of the flames, the meat still, you know, is kind of protected. So here, as you can see, the wood is starting to burn. So the heat is transferring from the coal to the wood.
Should fire touch the meat or not?
It's the heat that is going to cook the meat, not the fire, right? So the fire will contain some heat, but the fire is also going to burn. So what we don't want the extremities of the meat to be crispy before the inside is cooked.
We're going to have a quick drink, a quick glass of wine and another of water. Wait for the charcoal to burn, and we'll get back to you in a couple minutes.
In a whiff.